You're listening to the Styling Advisory Podcast, the only show exploring the business of personal styling and how stylists are helping retailers to personalize customer experiences. We're interested in how styling leaders have built a successful business and what retailers are doing to capitalize on the styling client community. If you're a personal stylist currently avoiding doing the marketing activity on your to-do list today, schedule your tea and chat with founder and host Sarah Cohen via the website. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to a fresh new episode of the Styling Advisory Podcast, a show for personal stylists and image consultants who are looking for new ways to grow their client base and market their business using strategies that have worked for successful image professionals from all around the world. I'm your host, Sarah Cohen, and today on the show, we have the incredible Friska Wirja joining us. Welcome, my love.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
My pleasure. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with Friska, she is a personal brand coach, a top 50 global change management thought leader, a TEDx and international speaker, and a facilitator. But today's episode is all about how Friska went from entrepreneurial newbie with $0 in the bank to international keynote speaker, fueled by a trial and error approach to her marketing, mixed with a highly intentional personal brand. So that's what I wanted to get into today. I'll explain in the show notes, but essentially Friska and I met at an event, which was a Miss Tyler Mervac collaboration last year for the spring fashion campaign. And really what struck me immediately as soon as I walked into the room was you, Friska. I just knew that you were the most important person in the room. And it was the external, what I saw from the outside, your outfit, but then everything from your poise, your speech, your presence, there were a lot more elements to your personal brand than just your beautiful white suit. So, and I know that through our conversations, we've spoken about how you have intentionally and strategically built your personal brand and used that to leverage the opportunities that have built your business. So that in itself was, I guess, your key marketing strategy.
Yeah, correct.
Beautiful. Well, let's start off. I wanted to start with a really broad question because I think we hear the term personal brand a lot, but what is it really? You know, how do you define the term a personal brand and how do you build one once you know what it is?
It's how people describe you when you're not around. So it's kind of no varnish, just the you know, what are the keywords, the descriptors that come to mind when people think about you? So that's how I would define a personal brand. Yeah. And in terms of how do you start building one? Well, first of all, you need to know what you stand for. You need to know what's important to you. You need to have, and if you're not happy with your personal brand or you're not sure, ask people. Like when I first started on my journey, this is how OCD I am. I actually sent a survey out to about 100 of my business contacts, a mixture of business and personal contacts. And I asked them key questions like, what are my strengths? How would you describe me in 3 words? What do I do better than anyone that you know? And I knew then I had the fundamentals of the personal brand to work with. So if you're not sure, ask.
Firstly, as someone that does not receive criticism well, even constructive criticism, that is a terrifying exercise. But that's actually a really good point. And it's an exercise that I sort of roll out in my coaching programs as well, which is to say, well, ask a friend to describe you. You know, how do they describe you? What are the adjectives that people associate with you? But in the personal brand realm, and for a lot of image professionals that are listening to this episode, who either work already with executive, you know, women in leadership or who are looking to move into that segment, the number one thing we talk about is how you present the external, facade, and I guess the interpretation of that in a work environment. So I know you mentioned before that your personal brand involves a whole lot of other elements. What are those elements?
I think it's also a lot of it to do with the energy. So what is the energy that you project as soon as you enter into a room? Like I've met a lot of very wealthy people wearing, $20,000 Armani suits that don't have the conviction in themselves, like that don't have a strong personal brand. So it's not just how you wear, but how you wear it to make sure that it doesn't wear you. And, in terms of in a professional setting, it's not just the clothes that you wear, but it's you know, the things that you say in a meeting. It's how you engage with other people. It's all things. It's written, it's verbal, and it's interpersonal. So it's the key is to make sure all these different elements align and are integrated. Right? No. That's the key, to make sure your values and your traits permeate through all these different channels. You know how some people, like, they have a really amazing online presence, and then you meet them face to face and you're like, really? Like, there's a big disconnect. So people with the strongest personal brand, they're aligned in all these different channels and forums and formats.
So how did you start? I mean, as we said, you started your business without any investment, without anyone helping you, and you had to leverage the only asset you had, which was yourself.
Correct.
What was that journey like? Like, how did you become the polished, like, chic as fuck version of yourself that you are now?
Well, I've always, for as long as I remember, I've always liked, you know, dressing up and being feminine and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't realize how to channel all that, because I was actually penalized for that in the workplace. I worked for a very large tech company, and my performance appraisal was more like an appearance appraisal. They said, oh, you're too feminine. Can you dress down a bit, be a bit more conservative? Anyway, didn't last long. Didn't last long there. But how I started was, I started my business at the worst time ever. So I thought November 2019, I've had a decade of working for the big end of town in mining, engineering, and technology. I wanted more control over where, when, and how much I worked. And I wanted to be able to create value with just an internet connection. And I thought, I'm going to try consulting independently. And then, as you know, the whole world imploded. All our borders shut in February, which is 3 months later. And so I could either wail and cry and roll around on the floor, or I could realize it was an opportunity. Borders shut, my entire pipeline vanished. So I was speaking to a big mining company in the Pilbara. I was speaking to a family office in Switzerland. And I realized, okay, that's the crap thing. But the good thing is, everybody's at home. Everybody's bored out of their minds. Everybody's very open to being entertained, educated, and inspired online. And I chose my platform. And because my market is executives and business professionals, I chose LinkedIn. And I intentionally started thinking about, how do I want to show up on that platform every single day, Monday to Friday? I would engage people in the DMs, start conversations. And I had to think about, what are these values that I want to exude through my content, and how do I do that? So it was, in the beginning, no one was doing videos. So I started doing videos. I started doing 60-second, really short and sharp things, like three tips on how to, I don't know, elevate your presence, like four tips on how to encourage engagement in meetings. So that's really what helped me grow my following from 5,000, and it's nearly 48,000 now. It was the videos.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had to change with the times. Now I don't do as much videos, because now what gets the most eyeballs is carousels and long form text with a really good photo. So you have to keep on top of these changes in the platform. No matter what platform that you're on, algorithms change all the time, and it pays to invest your time and effort in making sure that you are, you know, because it takes a lot of time and effort to create content and make sure that it's on brand. So you want to make sure, if you're going to go through the trouble of creating it, then you want to make sure that you have a strong community that can actually enjoy your content. And to do that, you have to be on top of the changes in the algorithm.
But let's go back to the beginning. As you said, when you started on LinkedIn, you had a smaller audience, and then you grew it to 48,000. And I like that you said that you had to Monday to Friday do this. Again, one of the biggest misconceptions is the concept that you can become an overnight success, or that businesses just blow up. It is hard work consistently, even when you feel bored and uninspired. So out of interest, how long every day were you working, were you spending on that platform in the beginning?
2-3 hours a day.
Yep. And the proof is in the pudding, I guess. You know, no matter who I speak to on this show, every single person, whether they've picked one platform or a handful or what have you, they really have invested the time to go deeper than just the surface level. You know, back in the day, we used to get away with just liking someone's post. But particularly with LinkedIn, for those of you that are listening, that you know your ideal client is on LinkedIn, because that's someone that is looking to advance their career or build their network or, you know, or move completely. They're looking for ways to do that. And so it's obvious what content you need to create for them if you know who you're trying to market to. But it does take a little bit more than just liking a post or you know, sharing something sort of surface level. So what, out of interest, what articles or what long form content topics seem to resonate the most on LinkedIn for you?
It's usually dissecting a brand or a change and helping people apply that to their own individual lives, or some sort of story about, people love stories, right? We're hardwired for story and connection, some sort of story about overcoming adversity, overcoming challenges, and, you know, what people love takeaways as well. So what are the top three tips that you can take away from this? So people always want to be learning something.
Yes.
And, you know, and all of my content, it does one of three things. It either educates, it inspires, or it entertains. So those are my three pillars. If it doesn't do one of those three things, then I don't post it. You know, there's a lot of people that just post funny videos from TikTok. Like, that's so not on brand for me. My brand is all about luxury, premium, meaning, and depth. So if those are my values, then I make sure my content aligns with that.
Oh, it's so good. And I think to your point about the content, you're right. There is a, particularly with the advancements in AI now and people getting pretty excited about the ability to just pump out content, I think it's really, I know it is going to become even more vital that you consider what you are saying, the purpose, the intent of the content you're creating, and what action you want the reader to take, because there's no shortage of words available, but your ability, as you said, you chose your words particularly to dissect something, to share an emotional story, to share a story of adversity, where you're putting your opinion, you're using your education and knowledge and training and expertise and aligning that with your opinion on something topical. And that's very interesting, because again, I know for a lot of image professionals that are creating content for LinkedIn, it is hard. You don't want to keep saying these are five outfits that, you know, female CEOs wear. That's not a content strategy. But being able to dissect, explore, share takeaways, and educate on that platform seems to be, if there was a winning formula, it seems to be something that works really well.
Yeah, and I also love to share stories from history that always seem to get really good traction, and it's all to do with what I do. It's all about, you know, changing people's perceptions, like, for example, the Eiffel Tower. So not sure if many people know, everybody hated it when it was first built. There was protests, etc. But now it's the most loved and most photographed monument in history. Florence Nightingale, another one who totally revolutionized hospital sanitation and the nursing profession, you know, and she educated physicians on the importance of hygiene. Like, those sort of things relate to what I do. But then it's easy. Then I just think of, okay, who are famous people in history, famous moments? How can I apply that to what I do? You can do the same with image. You can do the exactly the same with image. Like, you know, like you see reincarnations of these women who have, for example, married into royalty or married a president. And then you see the before and after of the image, like, holy moly, like Mary, who's married to Prince Frederick of Denmark. You know, she's totally, completely changed her brand image. So you can also do things like that, like go back, look at examples that people can easily relate to and are quite well known, and then put your own spin on it from an image perspective.
God, that is such a good idea, guys. Rewind and write that down. It is such a great idea. Plus, it's interesting and it's different. It's therefore interesting. It's going to capture attention. And that makes me think how important it must be for any image professional that is hoping to sell that type of transformation to clients, that they themselves have a very, very intentional, clearly identifiable personal brand, right? You can't sell it if you don't look the part.
If you don't look the part, or you've got an invisible social profile at the end of the day. Like, a lot of people say yes to me because I've got a vault of wisdom and thought leadership backed up behind me. 2 years ago, no one gave me the time of day. But you don't get to where I am today if you don't invest the time in developing that vault, you know?
And you actually have a vault. One of the things that I loved, a little sort of marketing tactic, is in your email signature. I love this, actually, guys. underneath your signature is, these are the four, I think four or five ways that someone can work with you. Access your vault of information, you know, workshops. I know you've got
download
an ebook
my
as well.
Ebook. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so smart. It's smart because straight away we know immediately how we can work with you. It also shows that value ladder for, you know, I think you said the other day, whether someone has $5 or whether they have $2,000 or $10,000 or what have you, there's a way of being able to interact with you. And that immediately makes it easy for people to go, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
I love it. Mm. So can we move on to your fabulous TEDx talk? What I wanted to ask you, and this is something, you know, a lot of people would love the opportunity to be able to speak on that stage. My colleague, Erin Mathis, and we run the Going Virtual program. She did a TEDx talk on image. With yours, how did you go about doing that? You said you started essentially 2 years ago, no one would give you the time of day. Over the last 24 months, how did you leverage your personal brand to secure a TEDx talk?
So in that week that I decided to do a TED talk, three different people actually said to me, you know what, you're great. You're really engaging. You should do a TED talk. And I'm like, oh, bald or red rag. Fine. I'm going to do a TED talk. So literally went online. So I'm based in Sydney. Unfortunately, all the speaker applications had closed for Sydney. So I looked at Melbourne. I thought, oh, I'm in Melbourne every month. And it asks you to apply. So the process, no matter what TED talk you do, the process is the same. There's always three questions. What is your one core idea? Why does the world need to hear about this idea right now? And why are you the best person to speak about this idea? Hmm. Now, you then couple that with a 60-second pitch of you and your idea. Now, this underscores the importance of investing in your personal brand, right? So I actually wanted to speak about a topic that I didn't end up speaking on the TEDx stage. I wanted to talk about acceptance and diversity and ethnic cultures and how we kind of all come together and blah, blah, blah. They came back to me within 5 days and it was such a long email. And because it was so long, I thought it was a rejection letter. And I was like, shit, I didn't get it. But it wasn't a rejection letter. It was, thank you so much for your TED talk idea. We love you. We love the energy. Obviously, unfortunately, we've already accepted two other people that are speaking about very similar topics to the one that you submitted. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've done some Googling and some LinkedIn stalking, and we realize you have quite a big background in transformation. Would you mind redoing your talk and being our featured technology speaker? So, of course, I said yes. But if I had nothing behind me, they'd be like, delete, reject, goodbye, you know?
Oh, so true. Okay, fabulous. And then once you did your TED talk, I guess this is sort of one of your, dreams realized. You've been able to sell that to additional clients. One, I think, is a bank in Dubai. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm off to Dubai next month. I had a pharma event last week. 2 weeks ago, I had an investor conference. And later in the year, I'm speaking at Digital Transformation Live in Sydney, which is the biggest DT event in the country.
That is incredible. So how did you go about, you know, once you've got your TED talk and you've got the recording, are you sending out press releases? How are you securing those keynote speaker opportunities?
My platform is LinkedIn. If I could suggest to people that are listening today, choose a platform, dominate the hell out of it, and then diversify into other platforms. So I've been on LinkedIn 2 years. It's just all through my LinkedIn content. That's how I get it. And I've only just started on Instagram about 3 months ago. So I haven't realized any value from that yet. But yeah, so LinkedIn is the answer.
And that's interesting because for those of us that maybe think, oh no, you know, what will people think if I don't have a presence on all of the platforms? This is, you know, this is the proof right now that if you have that depth, that genuine value and integrity on one platform, that is overwhelmingly more impactful than having some crap on every single platform.
Yeah, like I've seen a lot of people have every single platform you can imagine, right? Twitter, TikTok, whatever. But there's like, they've got like three followers and one post. It's like, what's the point of having all these channels if there's nothing valuable that you're offering? It's just noise.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. I've noticed a lot of people choosing LinkedIn and then thinking, okay, I'm not too sure how to go about it. But I also think that we worry, what if I make a mistake? So, I mean, are there any mistakes or I guess the opposite of best practice, you know, like what are some of the things that maybe people would look to avoid or just be mindful of when they are engaging and creating content for LinkedIn?
Things to avoid is, I think, jamming. Remember, a picture says 1,000 words. So I know a lot of people want to put forward really sort of comprehensive posts, but think about how you can chunk it up to make it easy for people. Like, for example, if I've got I just did a video series called The 6 P's of Resistance. Instead of shoving all those 6 P's in one video, I release one video a month, diving deep on each of those pillars. So think about how you can do the same with your content. Because if it's too complicated, people are just going to scroll right past. And any good copywriter will tell you this, the gold is in the hook. So that first line, spend 80% of your effort making sure that it's really draws people in, like it makes people click that see more button. So yeah, over index on the first line.
Oh God, this is such a great episode because these are actionable, strategic, effective ways of building an audience on LinkedIn. And I know you can obviously, we can all Google what's best practice, but I love hearing from people like you that are saying, no, this is what I've done, this is what I've followed, and this is why it's worked. Are there any last suggestions or recommendations you can make? Oh, actually, I know what we can, what I wanted you to talk about. You've got a conference or workshop coming up in a short while, which I think
that,
I think a lot of image consultants, certainly those in Australia, would find a lot of value in attending. Do you want to talk to me about that workshop before we finish?
Sure. So it's called Power, Purpose and Presence. So it's going to be in Melbourne later in June. And it's really because I've spent a lifetime in male-dominated industries, and the women that are there are rare and far and few between. And when they are there, they either act like men or like wallflowers. And it's because they don't have a strong sense of self. Like when you consider first impressions now are made in 3 to 5 seconds, like how you present yourself when you walk into a room, that instant bang is so important. First impressions can be change, but it requires a lot of effort and an energy down the track. So in this two-day experience, I talk about how to make sure you are aligned with your purpose through your content, through your thought leadership. I break down the fundamentals of how to balance logic and emotion to influence and persuade people towards a certain outcome, and how to develop relationships with those people that you think are out of reach, how to strategically start planting just the seeds so you remain top of mind for them. So yeah,
far I unpack out. A lot of stuff. That is really, and even that, you know, like people do events all the time, and usually they're typically broad. But what you've just said then is so juicy and interesting, and it's hooky. I want to come.
It's the kind of event I wish was around, you know, 10 years ago, because I was constantly meeting people but not connecting. You know, I wasn't landing clients, I wasn't getting the promotion, and it was all about not what I was saying, but how I was saying it and how I was connecting with them. So yeah, I've distilled that in this experience.
Fabulous. So what I'll do for everyone that's interested, I'm going to add the link to buy tickets and find out more information in the show notes. Friska, thank you so much for your time today, my love. This has been fantastic.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye, darling. You've been listening to the Styling Advisory Podcast with Sarah Cohen. If you're enjoying the vibe, you can join our community of styling experts at The Styling Advisory on Instagram and Facebook. And you can watch these interviews on our YouTube channel, Styling Advisory TV. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our show so Sarah can spend more time on the mic.